Okay, the next argued case is number 21-1995, Ethicon LLC against Intuitive Surgical Intuitive. Mr. Desai.
May it please the court. For the reasonable expectation of success, the critical issue was whether the Solintez spring and pin mechanism could fit in the space of the jaws of the green device and be strong enough to withstand the user firing force. The board's decision on this issue was legally deficient and factually unsupported. The board's conclusory statements did not hold Intuitive to its burden of proof and did not meet the board's obligations under Personal Web to provide logical and rational reasons for its decision. It is visually apparent that the green device does not have the space in the jaw frame for a spring and pin, and it was uncontested that the green device has to withstand higher forces than the Solintez device, because of the significant differences.
But in combining, wouldn't a Posito account for those differences?
That was the bare conclusion that the board made, but
because
it did not.
Because here, the Posito, it appears that there was an agreement as to the level of skill of the Posito, and here it's a pretty high level, isn't it?
I think it's the same level of skill that we've had in numerous cases involving these staplers. I wouldn't say it's a high level. I think it's the ordinary level of skill.
There's a requirement for a mechanical engineering degree.
That's correct.
Why couldn't a mechanical engineer make the room in the different devices in order to combine?
Well, I think that is fundamentally the issue with the board's decision, which is that they made a bare conclusion that a Posito would appreciate design modifications needed to make it work, but the board never said what those would be.
There was testimony as to that, right?
Well, the board cited paragraphs 154 to 171 of Dr. Nodell's declaration. That was the only portion of the declaration and evidence that was cited, and those paragraphs do not explain any modifications that would be needed to make the spring and pin lockout fit in the green device and be able to withstand the firing force in the green device. And this is clear because of the testimony of Dr. Nodell. This key testimony is in Appendix 4986, and Dr. Nodell admitted that he did not do an analysis of whether the spring and pin would be able to withstand firing force in the green device. If we take a look at that testimony, at page 39, lines 14 and 19, Dr. Nodell acknowledged that in order for the spring and pin to work as a lockout, meaning success, it would need to withstand the force of firing in the green device. But then at page 40, line 7 to 9, we asked, did you assess how much force the locking plate would need to withstand? And he said, quote, no, I did not. At page 41, lines 3 to 8, we asked, quote, did you do any analysis to determine whether the locking plate you proposed on pages 92 and 93 of your declaration would be able to withstand the force of a user firing in the green 695 device? And he said, quote, no, I did not do an analysis. Then at lines 16 to 20, Dr. Nodell acknowledged, quote, there's not enough detail in these figures to fully define or analyze the strength of the concept. For example, we can't tell how long that is or if there is additional structure that supports or anchors it into the wall. Dr. Nodell also admitted at 4987 that he never considered how the locking plate would be retained within the recess. Your Honor, it was Intuitive's burden to provide those details. And by Dr. Nodell's own testimony, he failed to analyze the critical issue, which is the space and strength of the pin and lockout in the green device, not in the Solintez device. And
well, that's my point. Wouldn't the Posito modify in order to provide the structure that would lend strength? The question is, here is it, to combine. Is there any reason why a Posito would look at the two separate prior references and combine them? And the board decided yes, because one has a safety mechanism and the other one doesn't.
I think, Your Honor, we're conflating the issue of motivation to combine with reasonable expectation of success. The board did say in its decision that there would be benefits to a lockout and a lockout would be desirable, but that doesn't account for whether you would expect success in the green device, which is a substantially different device. And at Appendix 23, when the board was comparing the two devices, it by its own admission, it gave a casual review. Quote, and it said, both Solintez and Green are staplers. They have anvils, and they have jaws that move from open to close. But those similarities have nothing to do with the issue of withstanding firing force in the green device and the space and strength issue. The board never addressed the differences that were pertinent to the space and strength issue, which we identified at Appendix 3213 in the patent owner response. And the figures of the devices very clearly show this issue. If you look at page 24 to 25 of the blue brief, you can see the Solintes device uses a spring and pin lockout, but it's a right angle tool where the staples are deployed all at one time. The jaws are perpendicular to the shaft of the tool, and because of this orientation, there's a deep frame with substantial space for a spring and pin lockout. But if you look at pages 18 and 19 of the blue brief, you can see the green device. It's a linear device that both staples and cuts tissue. The staples are ejected sequentially as the user pushes forward and the firing members advance by the user. The jaws are long and thin, and there is visibly no space for a spring and pin in those jaw frames. And this lack of space is clearly apparent on page 12 of the gray brief. On the left is the drawing from Dr. Nodell where he drew a yellow pin in the side of the frame of the green staple in the schematic drawing. But on the right of page 12 of the gray brief, you see a linear device that corresponds to the green stapler. And this shows very clearly there is literally no space in those jaws in the frame for a spring and pin lockout. And I think critically, it was incumbent on the board to explain what modifications could be made, how you could do this, not simply to say, well, the necessary design modifications would be known by a PCETA without actually telling us what those would be and how they would work. And the very important part, going back to Dr. Nodell's testimony, is that he was very clear, this is Intuitive's expert, that he did not assess this issue. In other words, he drew the yellow pin there, but never addressed whether it could actually fit and whether it could be strong enough to actually fit and withstand the user firing force in the green stapler. And critically, that was Intuitive's burden. And if we look at the board's criticism.
In the case of Brown and Williamson Tobacco, we said that evidence of a motivation to combine may flow from the prior art references themselves. The knowledge of one of ordinary skill in the art, or in some cases, the nature of the problem to be solved. Seems to me that this case fits exactly that quotation right there. Am I wrong?
I respectfully disagree, Your Honor, because I think, again, you're referring to the motivation to combine. And if we look at...
Yes, I am. Exactly what I'm referring to.
Right, but I think we're talking about the issue of reasonable expectation of success, what this court has specifically
said. Well, that's another issue. I'm trying to keep you back with the motivation to combine issue.
And I understand, Your Honor, but
But you don't answer the question.
The error... the board did identify motivations to put a lockout. They said that
you agree that
I agree with
they
that
were
point.
Correct with that.
I agree with that point that they identified that it would be desirable and it would
the
be beneficial.
The only dispute reasonable.
That is the core issue here, that okay. The board's findings on reasonable expectation of success, they did not explain, they did not have rational reasons for what they said, and they don't have the testimony from Intuitive's expert because he explicitly admitted he did not analyze this issue. And I think if we talk about the burden issue here, it's very clear. When we look at the criticism of Ethicon's expert, the board critiqued Dr. Frontzak's opinions at Appendix 25 and 26. And here the board contended that Dr. Frontzak's opinions were speculation. But again, this was Intuitive's burden, and the board never provided its reasons why Dr. Nodell's testimony had the details on the issue of withstanding user firing force and being able to fit in the space of the green device. And we can also see from the board's explanation of its critique of Dr. Frontzak at Appendix 25 and 26 that it confused the issue of motivation to combine with reasonable expectation of success. On Appendix 26, after criticizing Dr. Frontzak, the board said, there were clear benefits to using a lockout, and a PCETA would have appreciated those benefits would be desirable. But again, that has nothing to do with whether you would expect a spring and pin lockout to be able to withstand the firing force in a substantially different device that has no space in the jaws. That's simply an issue of whether you would desire a lockout. And again, the board never explained why Dr. Frontzak's reasoning was wrong. He provided significant testimony an explanation for why there was a lack of space in the green jaws and why the forces would be higher in the green jaws. That's at appendix 5556 to 60. And again, why was it okay for Intuitive's expert where they had the burden and he didn't address this issue at all? I see your honors, I'm running into my rebuttal time, so I'll reserve my time unless there are further questions.
Okay, at the moment, thank you, counsel. Mr. Katz.
Your honors, may it please the court. This is a straightforward, substantial evidence case. The board's decision relies on substantial evidence, and it should therefore be affirmed. The primary argument I heard on the other side is that the board allegedly shifted the burden. There was no burden shifting here, and the board made directly the findings on both motivation to combine and reasonable expectation of success, as I'll discuss. Interestingly, I know a large portion of our brief addresses motivation to combine, because that was an issue argued in the briefing. I just heard counsel concede that they're no longer disputing motivation to combine. So the only remaining issue is reasonable expectation.
That's what I understood also.
So let's turn right to it. And if we go to Appendix 20 or Appendix 53, depending on which copy of the final written decision you're looking at, that's where the board actually begins its discussion. And what the board states is, petitioner contends that a person of ordinary skill in the art would have had multiple reasons to implement Solientier's lockout mechanism and Green's surgical stapling device as one of ordinary skill in the art, and here's a key language, would have recognized that such a locking mechanism would advantageously prevent inadvertent severing of tissue. So right there, the board is stating motivation to combine and establishing the reasonable expectation of success. Now, what does the board say next? This is the top of the board's decision at 21. Petitioner also reasoned the skilled artisan would have recognized Green's stapling instrument as being ready for improvement to yield predictable results. Again, quoting our petition, which is then citing to KSR. So again, that is a reasonable expectation of success issue. Now, they keep saying that the board didn't put us to our proof. Well, that statement is followed by the sentence, petitioner supports its position, and now this is about both motivation combined and reasonable expectation of success, in his proposed combination of Green and Solientier with a citation to the testimony of Dr. Nodell, citing Nodell at paragraphs 157 to 171. So right there, we have established the prima facie case of obviousness. The board did not shift any burden. The board didn't jump to Ethicon's rebuttal arguments. The board first laid out what evidence it was relying on. And in those paragraphs, which are at appendix 5335 to 5346, the Dr. Nodell painstakingly shows the how, both the why and the how. And he specifically gives two different ways in which the two staplers could be combined. So it's very detailed, and he provides descriptions of how the locking pin and plate could be inserted, whether you might use a pin, whether you might use a plate. You can mount it on the bottom. You can mount it on the side. It's all in there. The how is there. And only after the board does that does then the board then go to Ethicon's arguments and then shows why it is not agreeing with them. Fundamentally, this is a case about credibility. The board found Dr. Nodell highly credible and highly persuasive, and the board rejected the testimony of their expert. That's a credibility determination that, you know, cannot and should not be disturbed on appeal. And the board specifically says that it considered all of their arguments and it found Dr. Nodell more persuasive than their expert. In fact, that's at the appendix 27. It says, we therefore credit Dr. Nodell's testimony over that of Dr. Franzak, who is their expert. And that really should end the matter, but they do say in the very next sentence, we have considered all of patent owner's arguments challenging grounds for unpatentability, and we find them unavailing. So any argument that the board overlooked, disregarded arguments isn't true. The board is saying, we looked at it all, and pretty much it is a battle of the experts, and we just find Dr. Nodell to be much more credible. In fact, on the reasonable expectation of success point, let me note that the board states on Appendix 26, in our view, Dr. Nadell's testimony is logical and credible and appropriately reflects the types of design assessments that such skilled artisan would have employed in seeking to improve Green's instrument based on Solientia's teachings. So right there, the board is stating that this block of paragraphs, which painstakingly go through two different ways of making the combination, reflects the type of design assessments a person with skill in the art would make. So that's, that is certainly establishing substantial evidence. Dr. Nadell did testify at the deposition that he did not do any kind of like materials analysis. And that's true. He didn't, nor did he have to. In fact, the patent at issue here, which discloses a lockout, doesn't do a materials analysis. The prior art doesn't do a materials analysis, right? This level of skill in the art, as Judge Reyna noted, is high, as the board found. And one of skill in the art can take the patent, can take the prior art. Solientia's itself doesn't do a materials analysis. And, you adjust mechanical components to fit their purpose. They showed a picture of an actual stapler. By the way, that stapler wasn't the prior stapler, but regardless, one can readily see, even in their own picture, that there is a plastic width to the device, and you could make that a little thicker if necessary to include the locking pin, so there's no issue there. There's just plenty of area to make room. I heard repeatedly that the device supposedly was substantially different. Well, the board found they were relatively the same. So the board already made a fact finding, which is based on Dr. Nadell's testimony. And so there's really no basis to disturb that finding either. Unless your honors have any questions, that's all I've...
Well, just to be clear, then your argument is that what they're claiming is being claimed so broadly that there's no room for any sort of protection for this particular device with its specific limitations?
Your Honor, I'd phrase it this way. The claim itself just requires that you have a lockout to stop the advancement of the firing bar, which can be caused and is caused in all the prior art we cite by making some sort of an obstruction go in the way of the firing bar. That's the key. All you need is some sort of an obstruction. The claims don't require anything specific on the structure or shape or size of that obstruction.
Well, you're saying, so since it's obvious to have a lockout on a stapler, putting a lockout on a stapler for endoscopic surgery is no contribution
exactly.
To the art, or that, of course, that's going to work, don't bother me.
Not the latter, Your Honor. First of all, the claims don't require endoscopic, and in fact, the two prior references we're combining are not endoscopic instruments. So Yinche and Green are both actually not endoscopic. What we do is, when they made the arguments that, oh, these devices are very small, we actually then showed evidence in the prior art that, well, there are all sorts of lockouts in the prior art. Now they lock out in slightly different ways and different manners, and so they don't necessarily meet the claim limitations, but we showed, and Dr. Nadell testified, that it's definitely possible and happens all the time that you create little tiny obstructions using metal, little mechanical parts that can stop a firing bar. So, we're not just relying on ipsedixis say so. Dr. Nadell explains how one would go about it in those paragraphs. And in fact, Dr. Nadell also testified in his declaration that he had developed prior art lockouts for small staplers at Ethicon in the prior art. So there's no question prior art lockouts in surgical staplers existed, Your Honor. Does that answer your question?
Yes, well, I'm having trouble with the public interest here. You're saying the public interest is not to have such devices because they can't be patented, because they're a small change from what's come before. Is that right? That's where we are.
No, pretty much every stapler on the market surgical strap-on market that I'm aware of has a lockout today. So the public interest is served. The lockouts are there.
The public interest is not to have such devices.
No, no. The public interest is to have devices with lockouts.
The public interest is to create it and give it away to your competitors so that you can't make any money out of it.
No, you don't make your money on the lockout, Your Honor. The surgical staplers are sold for other features. The lockout is a safety device that is in every surgical stapler today, as far as I know. But the features that you are selling a stapler for have nothing to do with the lockout. This is just it's kind of like you don't sell a car for its airbag. All cars have airbags, right? You can't stop people from putting airbags in cars. The lockout is like an airbag. It's a standard element. Everyone has it. It's not patently distinct anymore. It's already in the prior art. And so the public interest is well served, just like having cars have airbags. You don't need to give improper patents to airbags to encourage people to develop airbags. So people can develop lockouts, Your Honor, and then patent their specific lockout. I guess going back to your earlier question, yes, the claim is very generic as to a lockout. There's nothing special about the lockout. In fact, it's worded functionally. So now I think I understand where Your Honor was going earlier. Yeah, this claim is very broad. It just pretty much says a lockout that stops advancement. There's nothing in the claim about how to stop the advancement. So if they had developed a new way to stop the advancement, they could have patented that. But they didn't develop a new way to stop the advancement. They're using the same... Actually, let me be very clear. In the patent, their way of stopping advancement is they have their firing bar device fall into a recess. Mm-hmm. So it falls in a recess and gets trapped. We don't do that. If they had claimed falling into a recess, maybe they would have gotten a patent if they in fact invented it. I don't know. But they claimed it much broader than that. So they did not try to limit their claims to their one lockout design disclosed in the patent. Their claim pretty much says if you stop advancement, any obstruction would work. So yes, Your Honor, going back to your first question, the claim is worded so broadly, it is not narrowly tailored to anything they might claim to have invented in this patent.
Anything else? Any questions? Thank you. Could you sigh?
Thank you, Your Honor. Let me first start with Appendix 20 and 21, which is where my friend went first. And I think there you can very clearly see the points of that decision are about motivation to combine, that such a locking mechanism would advantageously prevent the inadvertent severing and would be beneficial. That is an issue of motivation to combine, not whether the spring and pin from the Solintis device, which is a right angle stapler with a deep frame, could be made to work in the Green device, which is a very different linear stapler with a thin jaw. That's simply not the issue of reasonable expectation of success. I think, Judge Newman, to your questions about the scope of the claim here, I think there were some elements that were not discussed. The patent claim is not to any lockout. It is to a stapler with an I-beam firing element that includes a lockout that will block advancement of that firing element. It is not to any lockout mechanism. And I think this is clear if we actually look at some of the reply evidence that Intuitive submitted that the board didn't even discuss in its decision. There were some staplers that they had tried to add in the reply on the issue of reasonable expectation of success, say, look, here's how you would do a lockout, here's how you would do a lockout, you can make a lockout work. For example, Geist and Green 817. And I think it's very important because the issue there is those devices do have lockouts, but they would not meet the claim elements of our patent. And that's because those devices have an architecture where the firing member is in the removable staple cartridge. Okay? And that means when there is no staple cartridge present, there is no firing member to block. And that is very different from the claims that we have in our patent. And I heard counsel say that, well, they don't do that. Well, Intuitive's device is like what's in our patent. They use an I-beam firing element with a lockout that blocks advancement of that I-beam firing element when there is no staple cartridge present. So they don't use these alternative prior art mechanisms where the firing element is actually in the stapling cartridge, so you don't have this issue of firing the firing element when there's no staple cartridge present. That's a significant difference. And so the idea that the claims are too broad and they cover any kind of lockout, simply not true. I think if we go back to Dr. Nodell's deposition testimony, 4986 appendix, it was not simply an issue of him that he did not analyze materials. He simply did not analyze the issue of whether the spring and pin would be able to withstand the force of firing in the green device. He was categorically clear about that. If you look at the testimony, it wasn't that I didn't look at the materials. It's that I didn't examine the force, and I didn't analyze that issue at all.
Do you agree with the statement that your friend made that on the issue of reasonable expectation of success, that it was essentially a battle of the experts?
I disagree with that because when it comes down to it, it was intuitive's burden. And on this particular issue of whether the green, whether you could make that spring and pin lockout work in the green device, which has those thin jaws, their expert was silent, right? So I understand that the board in form said, well, we're going to credit this expert over that expert. But the substance of actually putting intuitive to its burden, they did not identify what it is intuitive's expert said on that issue because he didn't say anything. And they also didn't address his deposition testimony that I pointed you to at 4986. So while they said the right words in form, in substance, our position is they did not actually put intuitive to its burden of proof because their expert admitted that he didn't analyze this issue. And then I think that would go to my last point about the Magnum case, which she cited, which is obviously that case involved a situation where the board expressly put the burden in the wrong place. And we're not saying that's what happened here. The board said the right words, but if you look at the substance of the decision, they did not place the burden on Intuitive because Intuitive's expert never actually analyzed this issue. And if you compare the details, where Intuitive's expert at paragraphs 154 to 171 doesn't talk about the space and strength issue, and then you look at Dr. Francek's opinions at appendix 5556 to 60, you can see that there was the detail in Dr. Francek's opinions on this issue, and it wasn't in Intuitive's experts. Unless your honors have any other questions, I rest.
Okay. Good. Thank you. Thanks to both counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The case is taken under submission.